These violent delights have violent ends, and in their triumph die, like fire and powder, which as they kiss, consume. Romeo and Juliet, Act 2, Scene 6. I felt like I was trapped in one of those terrifying nightmares. The one where you have to run, run till your lungs burst, but you can't make your body move fast enough. My legs seemed to move slower and slower as I fought my way through the callous crowd. But the hands on the huge clock tower didn't slow. With relentless, uncaring force, they turned inexorably toward the end. The end of everything. But this was no dream. And unlike the nightmare, I wasn't running for my life. I was racing to save something infinitely more precious. My own life meant little to me today. Alice had said there was a good chance we would both die here. Perhaps the outcome would be different if she weren't trapped by the brilliant sunlight. Only I was free to run across this bright, crowded square. And I couldn't run fast enough. So it didn't matter to me that we were surrounded by our extraordinarily dangerous enemies. As the clock began to toll out the hour, vibrating under the soles of my sluggish feet, I knew I was too late. And I was glad something bloodthirsty waited in the wings. For in failing at this, I forfeited any desire to live. The clock tolled again, and the sun beat down from the exact center point of the sky. Chapter 1, Party. I was 99.9% sure I was dreaming. The reasons I was so certain were that, first, I was standing in a bright shaft of sunlight, a kind of blinding clear sun that never shone on my drizzly new hometown in Forks, Washington. And second, I was looking at my Grandma Marie. Gran had been dead for 6 years now, so that was solid evidence toward the dream theory. Gran hadn't changed much. Her face looked just the same as I remembered it. The skin was soft and withered, bent into a thousand tiny creases that clung gently to the bone underneath. Like a dried apricot, but with a puff of thick white hair standing out in a cloud around it. Our mouths, hers a wizened pucker, spread into the same surprised half-smile at just the same time. Apparently, she hadn't been expecting to see me either. I was about to ask her a question. I had so many. What was she doing here in my dream? What had she been up to in the past 6 years? Was Pop okay? And had they found each other, wherever they were? But she opened her mouth when I did, so I stopped to let her go first. She paused too, and then we both smiled at the little awkwardness. Bella? It wasn't Gran who called my name, and we both turned to see the addition to our small reunion. I didn't have to look to know who it was. This was a voice I would know anywhere. Know and respond to, whether I was awake or asleep, or even dead, I'd bet. The voice I'd walk through fire for, or less dramatically, slosh every day through the cold and endless rain for. Edward. Even though I was always thrilled to see him, conscious or otherwise, and even though I was almost positive that I was dreaming, I panicked as Edward walked toward us through the glaring sunlight. I panicked because Gran didn't know that I was in love with a vampire. Nobody knew that. So how was I supposed to explain the fact that the brilliant sunbeams were shattering off his skin into a thousand rainbow shards like he was made of crystal or diamond? Well, Gran, you might have noticed that my boyfriend glitters. It's just something he does in the sun. Don't worry about it. What was he doing? The whole reason he lived in Forks, the rainiest place in the world, was so that he could be outside in the daytime without exposing his family's secret. Yet here he was, strolling gracefully toward me, with the most beautiful smile on his angel's face, as if I were the only one here. In that second, I wished that I was not the one exception to his mysterious talent. I usually felt grateful that I was the only person whose thoughts he couldn't hear, just as clearly as if they were spoken aloud.